Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Final hour for the week coming up. And a big weekend coming up as well. You need to stock up. Well, let's see. What's on the docket tonight? Well, we got high school football tonight, obviously. Sealands Grove trying to complete that undefeated regular season. They're the number one seed. They're on Eagle 107 tonight. Lewisburg's on the Valley 100.9 this evening. They're trying to enhance their playoff possibilities. And, of course, the game we'll have for you, 1380 WMLP has the Milton side of it with Steve Williams. And here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, very proud to have Kevin Herr and Dave Ritchie with the call this evening, the best in the business. 7 o'clock, the kickoff tonight with Shikellamy and Milton, and 6:30 will be the airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Shikellamy entrenched as that number 3 seed coming up, but still trying to build momentum for the postseason with that game coming up tonight. What a stretch run Shikellamy has had. They've been outstanding down the stretch. Also, big weekend, and tomorrow, big college football games. Penn State Northwestern coming up tomorrow. Looking forward to that. That should be a fabulous game at noon. You'll hear it right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK beginning at 10:30. Of course, Bucknell back in action. It'll be on Eagle 107 tomorrow. Alabama LSU tomorrow night. TCU Oklahoma State. Clemson Florida State. Ohio State Minnesota. Big games across the lot tomorrow. That will start the weeding out process in college football. You need to stock up for the weekend. You got Steelers Raiders at 1 on Sunday. You got the Eagles and the Cowboys at 8:30 on Sunday night. So you need to stock up. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket, Imports, Domestics, Microbrews. Did I mention beer? Oh, the best selection anywhere. Great staff. They'll help you get the cases to the car. They've got the store so well laid out, so easy to navigate. They have fresh hot roasted peanuts. They have water, soda, snacks. Pickle bar is second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Big week for Penn State. They've had town meetings. They had one in Rec Hall on Wednesday night as they discussed the future of facilities at Penn State. They are in the early stages of the process, and I've had a chance to sit down and talk with Penn State Athletic Director Sandy Barber, and it's a beautiful day at Happy Valley, as James Franklin would say. Sandy, great to have you with us.
Absolutely. I'm with James. It's a beautiful day in Happy Valley.
It always is. All right, obviously facilities is something that has really made the news for Penn State moving forward. I feel like I'm watching that scene in Apollo 13 when they come around from the backside of the moon and Swigert and Hayes get into an argument, and Tom Hanks says, guys, there's 650 things that have to happen between now and we splash down. We're up to number 8. I feel that really sums up where your situation is in this process. Is that an accurate way of putting it?
You know what? I think it really is. There are a lot of moving parts, and as you know, we've been having some town halls, and they've been fantastic, but there have been some comments about, well, you know, there are no specifics here, or there's really no plan, or and you don't even know how much it's going to cost. Well, actually, that's the point of doing the facilities master plan, is for us to solicit the assistance of a professional consultant who does these kinds of things for a living. The planning of facilities is up on all of the latest ways to address needs that intercollegiate athletic programs have. So we've engaged with Populous. We're now in the process of talking to literally hundreds of stakeholders, all of our coaches, student athletes, those that work on game day, those that work with academics, every aspect of the student athletes, and frankly, the fans' life. And what is it we need? Where are we? Where should we be? And what are those gaps? And how do we close those gaps? And how much will it cost? And that'll be the outcome of this, 8 months from now.
And what's interesting to those who said, well, you don't have, you know, any plan. Actually, that's incorrect. By selecting Populous, that was an important move. And for those who don't realize, that is the former HOK. What kind of confidence that what steered you to them and gave you the confidence that was the right group to be with?
Well, Steve, I think a number of things. Number one, they are, I think, widely recognized as the sports architects in the business. They've done a lot outside of college. They've done a lot of Olympic-type facilities. They've done a lot of professional facilities. They've also done a lot of college facilities. So that kind of breadth of experience was really important to us. This is a partnership on campus between OPP and Penn State Athletics. So the team, the Penn State team, that was important too. I think the second thing is, and this is, you know, I'm gonna break my own golden rule here. This plan is not just about our football venue, not just about Beaver Stadium. It's about 31. But I will tell you this: the fact that that Populous is currently doing Kyle Field at Texas A&M, which has widely been touted as one of the really great marriages of the old and the new, respecting tradition, maintaining kind of the integrity of what's been a great facility for a long time, but then addressing the today's modern needs. We believe that's something we're going to need to take on, and so that was certainly a factor. And then the third one, and this is admittedly way down the list, but it's a factor as well, is that they're two Penn Staters on the Populous team, and it's not because necessarily just hiring Penn Staters is the right thing, but they understand Penn State. And I think you can't undervalue that.
And one being, of course, former All-American linebacker Scott Radisic. Absolutely. Now, for those who may not realize it, a lot of Penn State fans were in Baltimore. You walked by an HOK or Populous facility in Oriole Park at Camden Yards, which does exactly what you talked about, takes old and makes it new.
Yes, and it's interesting because I got asked in the student town hall what my favorite Populous project was. And, of course, growing up a Baltimore Oriole fan, Camden Yards comes right to the top of the list, right?
Right, of course.
But that's one where, they built new. They didn't recreate anything, or they didn't renovate or add to. They took elements from the old Memorial Stadium and then did a lot of new stuff. What I believe we're looking at, and this has captured a lot of attention as well, is renovating Beaver Stadium to address the game day needs that exist. I certainly wouldn't be doing my job. I know there's some disagreement about this, but I certainly wouldn't be doing my job and my fiscal responsibility to the institution if we didn't ask Populous to examine the two possibilities, which are renovate, address the needs through renovation, address the needs through a new facility. And so that's exactly what they're going to do. I believe the answer for a variety of reasons is going to be renovation.
But you still have to lay all the options with the numbers on the table to make a rock solid decision. Fair assessment?
No, absolutely. And that's why we're doing it. And there really are two aspects to it. It's not just the numbers, although the numbers are a huge part of it. It's we have to identify our needs through this process. And then sometimes there are needs that just can't be addressed through renovation, or you make sacrifices in addressing those needs. And we just need to know what those are, if any at all, in our case.
Now, this is not – Beaver Stadium is obviously the center of this when it comes down to every fan around here. But this is a 31-sport look. The important, Sandy, in the end of looking at all the facilities, everything from the Natatorium to Jeffrey Field to I'm just scratching the surface.
Sure. We have – every one of our 31 programs has facility needs. Some of them are particularly relatively small when you look at it from, let's say, the perspective of you mentioned the McCoy Natatorium. That is our facility probably in the most dire need. I can't imagine that there's that coming out of this, there's not going to be a plan to build a new natatorium. Been asked a lot of questions about Jeffrey Field. You know, the interesting thing for us, and there's a part of this that, well, it's a big part of this that we'd be really, really proud of, is if you look at and you talk about the actual needs of our student athletes on game day. So, for instance, the field in Beaver Stadium, the field at Jeffrey Field, the field in our lacrosse facility, none finer in the country. You know, the playing surface, the things that our student athletes need on game day in those three facilities are beyond taken care of. They play on the very best that this country has to offer. And again, there's a lot of pride in that. Where the needs are, where that gap analysis comes in, has to do with, particularly as you look at Jeffrey and lacrosse, it has to do with game day, has to do with stands, has to seating, has to do with concession stands, has to do with press box, video board, restrooms, also team rooms in a number of these situations. So, you know, those aren't as big as, let's say, a new auditorium or a new tennis center or a renovated Beaver Stadium, but they're needs, significant needs, pressing needs nonetheless.
Give me the importance when you go to the town halls and you meet with groups that they understand that this is all going to be done in a phased way and not all at once.
Yeah, that's you know, that's certainly one of the things that we need to try to get through. It's been difficult because, as you've already mentioned and I've mentioned as well, a lion's share of the attention and the focus moves right to Beaver Stadium. But even you know, in a renovation project for Beaver, that would be done in a phased approach, so that you know, we're not interrupting any part of any football season, which we certainly cannot do, and have no options locally to move to. But you know, that's one of the messages that needs to get across. The other is, we're not going to build anything we can't afford.
Right.
And so that's why the cost of these. That's why, you know, we're starting out with needs and wants. You know, all of us are going in there and saying, wouldn't it be great to do this, or wouldn't it be great to do that, or to have this or to have that. And eventually, when it comes down to actually putting together an executable plan, you know, it'll come down to what these price tags look like in today's dollars, and then ultimately what they look like as we phase through it, because this will, you know, addressing these needs will not be a small number. We know that.
Sandy, you and I have discussed just going through, like, money and needs and making sure it's within budgets. There are several ways, obviously, of doing this. Wow, Terry Pegula and Kim Pegula make a donation. There's a hockey rink. Beaver Stadium has had additions to it done on mortgages at times.
We call that debt service.
Yes, yes, we call that debt service. And then there's the Jordan Center. Governor Casey, 60% of the money was from the state as a jobs program. About 40%, I think, at Medler Field, Lebronto Park. Governor Rendell was part of that. Does all of this enter into the equation as to how you're going to look at it? Would there be any thought of talking to the state about state money in a jobs program like the Jordan Center at Medler Field, Lebronto Park, or would that be off the table?
You know, Steve, I'm at this point in my time at Penn State, I'm certainly not familiar enough with the with the state's approach to or their you know, their interest in helping with facilities and,
that's,
you know, kind of what their criteria are. But there's no doubt we'll be looking at all sources. And if there are conversations to be had with the state about what they might be able to do, what they might be interested in, what we could convince them to
right.
do, you know, that's not off the table from my perspective. But I do think that we certainly have to recognize that philanthropy is going to be our primary source
right.
Here. And that, you know, a very generous Penn State alumni base who have great pride in Penn State and what we've achieved athletically, But when I say what we've achieved athletically, that means that combination of student-athletes who perform not only well on the field, court, pool, track, strip, course, but that they also are performing in the classroom. There's an awful lot of pride around that, and I believe that we'll certainly be able to count on our alumni to help us create what I believe can be the best facilities in the country.
And because of philanthropy, you've been able to get, you know, the renovation cooking over at Lash Building because of philanthropy, a new film room for the basketball teams. I mean, you know, you have some very generous people out there.
Oh, we absolutely do. And then again, it's back to they understand, they have the wherewithal, and they understand the impact that they're making on not only these students, but their university. And, you know, we're talking about facilities here, Steve, but, you know, there's no greater impact than our alumni and community and those that care really deeply about Penn State. That they can make, you know, there's no greater impact than they make than endowing a scholarship.
Exactly.
And having you and I both were at the endowed scholarship brunch just a couple of weeks ago, and I mean, you look around that room and you think of the number of young people who have an opportunity to receive a Penn State education because a Penn Stater cared about giving back.
Finally, you have the town hall meetings that you're doing. From your perspective, as you stand there and listen to questions, what are you trying to absorb in listening to either comments or questions along the way in your mental note-taking?
Yeah, you know, we certainly have a particular focus in wanting to get out there with the strategic plan, of which the facilities master plan is going to help us execute on some of those strategic goals and objectives. But for me, more than anything else, 1 year into my time at Penn State, it's really about hearing what's on people's minds. Sure, some of it relates to maybe things that I have commented on or that I've talked about in the presentation. I ask a couple of very pointed questions about certain aspects of it. What's your response to this? What's that feel like to you when I say, when I say the Penn State's reputation, those kinds of things. People come and people come to these things because they maybe want to hear, but they also want to be heard. And that's really, really important to me because it really helps us keep a pulse on what our community cares about, what's important to them, how they want to make an impact, and what it is they're proud of that we're doing or what it is they'd like us to do more of or less of. And so the listening phase is really important.
But it's also been important along the way, too, that you have wanted to make sure that this particular was very open in process. That's why everyone's finding out about the early steps.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, it's led to a little bit of, you know, particularly there were a few students that walked out of the room and said, well, you know, she really wasn't very specific about very much. And, you chuckle a little bit. But that's, we were giving them the 30,000-foot view and certainly want either validation that we're headed in the right direction
right. Or
comments around, whoa, tap the brakes here or slam the brakes. That doesn't make any sense at all. That's what we're looking for.
Well, I know you have other things you have to get to, so what I'll do is I'll tap the brakes on the interview and appreciate the time very, very much, Sandy.
Always a pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much.
Penn State Athletic Director Sandy Barber. Appreciate her time very much. Next half hour, Dave Ennett, the outstanding play-by-play voice of Northwestern football and men's basketball on WGN in Chicago. Dave will join us in the final half hour of the show to preview tomorrow's game from the Northwestern perspective. If you've missed anything on the Steve Jones Show today, check out the Steve Jones Show podcast here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Big weekend coming up, Shikellamy and Milton tonight. Kevin Herr, the Chief, Dave Ritchie, best in the business, working on our side. 7 o'clock tonight, 6:30 the airtime. Penn State tomorrow, Northwestern. It'll be a noon kickoff with a 10:30 airtime.
LSU, Alabama tomorrow night. Steelers in Oakland Sunday afternoon. Eagles and Cowboys Sunday night. Bucknell tomorrow as well. Big weekend coming up. Looking forward to it. All right. Coming up, we will hear from Dave Bennett. Bottom of the hour. News next on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Final half hour for the week here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. If you missed anything during the course of the week, Steve Jones Show podcast has that. It's a big weekend coming up. Shikellamy tonight, Milton, 7 o'clock the kick, 6:30 the airtime here on News Radio 1070 WKOK with Kevin Herm, a broadcast partner, along with the Chief Dave Ritchie. Looking forward to their great broadcast tonight. 6:30 the airtime, 7 o'clock the kick. If you like to hear the Milton broadcast with Steve Williams, that will be on 1380 Talk Radio, WMLP. Sealands Grove tonight, going for that undefeated regular season with Pat O'Brien, Ryan Brandt on Eagle 107. That's a 7 o'clock kick and a 6 o'clock airtime on Eagle 107. And Matt Catrillo will have the Lewisburg broadcast tonight on The Valley 100.9 this evening. Big game for them. They've got Mifflinburg for the Little Brown Jug coming up this evening. And that will be a 7 o'clock kick, 6:30 airtime on The Valley 100.9. So a big weekend and a big night coming up in high school football across the area. Also, a big day tomorrow with Penn State and Northwestern. Today's show being brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection anywhere. Don't forget, they have the peanuts fresh, hot, roasted every single day. The bags are right there at the register. They have water, soda, snacks. The pickle bar is second to none. It is all at Brewers Outlet. One-stop shopping to stock up for a big weekend. Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Proudly in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, and Hummel's Wharf. Kevin's been driving a great Sunbury Motors vehicle for weeks now. And there's another one. He's made the transition. He'll tell you more about that later tonight as well. So, plenty going on. Penn State, Northwestern. I mentioned what's on tap for high school football tonight. Well, coming up tomorrow on News Radio 1070 WKOK, Penn State and Northwestern. Our broadcast gets rolling at 10:30 tomorrow morning. Kickoff is set for noon, and time to bring in the outstanding, and I do mean that, outstanding play-by-play voice of Northwestern football and men's basketball on WGN in Chicago, Dave Bennett. Dave, my friend, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, Steve. Good being with you.
All right. They're 6-2 right now. I have felt from the outside looking in that this is as physical in the trenches of Northwestern teams I've seen since maybe that great 95 team. Am I off base, or has this been developing in this direction?
No, I think you're right on target, really. And I think, you know, it's tough I suppose to convince people that when they see the games against Michigan and Iowa, they kind of stick out like a sore thumb on the season schedule for this squad. But, you know, I think if you ask Stanford, if you ask Duke, if you ask Nebraska, and the other teams they've beaten, but those, I think, in particular, they'll tell you. I mean, it was not a fluke, and they beat Stanford in that opener. And I mean, they played a very physical football game. I think that's kind of set the tone for what they've done the whole season.
The bounce back against Nebraska, how impressed were you by that after those tough back-to-back games? Because, look, the Michigan game's kind of an odd game. There's an interception return for a touchdown. There's a kickoff return for a touchdown. It's not quite what it seems on the surface. But the bounce back at Nebraska, what was so important about the way they did it?
Well, it was huge, Steve. And I think the big thing that stood out to me was if you go back to the 2013 season, and this team was coming off a bowl victory, their first since, you know, the Rose Bowl of 1949, and they had won 12 games, and they're coming out, or 10 games rather, and they're coming into the season. They get off to a 4-0 start, and then they're hosting Ohio State, big night game, College Game Day is here. It's a really big deal, and they lose a very tough game to Ohio State. And so they go from being 4-0 to going kind of down the tubes, and they saw that season get away. They only won one more game. That was their finale against Illinois. And I think there was this feeling creeping in that, oh, no, here we go again. You know, great start, 5-0. Now you lose a couple of games, and you get whacked pretty good in doing so, 38-0. You give up 40 to Iowa. Now this is going to be another one of those where things are going to get away from them. So I think the fact they were able to go out to Nebraska, and Nebraska was coming off a big win, and it's a tough place, as you know, it's a tough place for visiting teams to win, and they were able to do it without getting a whole lot from their offense in a traditional sense in the first half of that game, and then the offense kind of found itself as the game went on. So I think that it was twofold. It was a bounce back, and I think we also saw a bit of a maturing process there for the redshirt freshman quarterback, Clayton Thorson.
Yeah, I'll get to him in a moment. I want to stick on the defensive side. Dean Lowry, yeah. And then we saw Anthony Walker's first start last year, and he was tremendous. He also ran an interception back for a touchdown. What's that combination meant to what Pat wants to do defensively?
Well, Walker, I think, set the tone early because if you go back to his performance against Stanford, his performance at Duke, the guy was absolutely all over the field. And I think Pat will tell you, you look back at last year, and he had a really standout game against Penn State when Colin Ellis was unable to go, and so Walker kind of got thrown in there more or less. But we didn't really know what to expect, you know, but and he had a big game. But then there were other times last season where he looked very much like a redshirt freshman. That has not been the case this year. 19 tackles against Duke, 3 tackles for loss, he had against Stanford, he had a fumble return for a touchdown against Minnesota. The guy has really played at a very, very high level. Dean Lowry, along with Deontay Gibson, the other senior defensive end on that line, these guys, I think, have just set the tone for the entire defense. And they've put pressure on quarterbacks, even when maybe they haven't quite gotten to them, but they've forced guys into mistakes. Lowry, the game he had at Nebraska 2 weeks ago was, you know, I know that you've had the privilege to watch a pretty good one in Nassib this year, and yeah. Kind of a special season, but that's about as good as you're going to see a guy play. He dominated that game against Nebraska, and, you know, 6 tackles for loss. He just seemed like he gets his hands up in the passing lanes, knocks down a lot of balls. And, you know, I just think that it's given them a real push up front that they haven't always had.
Lowry was absolutely outstanding. If anybody has a chance to watch that tape, that's how a lineman plays defense, the way Lowry played that game. Dave, when they sub-package, you know, for a lot, some teams the sub-package is, yeah, we bring in the nickel, take out a linebacker, bring in the nickel, take out a down lineman. Pat, when he sub-packages, they bring in personnel. Hall enters the game. McShepard enters the game. They move people around. They get two linemen. Chapman enters the game. What about the comfort level they've found in that sub-package on third and longer situations and the cohesion they've found with it?
Well, and there's another example there of how valuable Dean Lowry is.
Yeah.
Steve, because they'll move him inside in those situations too. I think what it speaks to is just the greater depth on this defense. We started to see sort of inklings of it last year. You mentioned the performance by Anthony Walker against Penn State. Godwin Igwebuke, who got thrown in there against Wisconsin a week later and came up with three interceptions in his first start as a redshirt freshman. So I just think that you're able to do that now. He's got the flexibility, and Mike Hankowitz, the defensive coordinator, has the flexibility to do that, given the depth throughout this lineup. Now, having said that, that depth's been tested a little bit, particularly in the secondary. Matthew Harris has been out the last couple of games, and I thought before he got hurt, he was playing at a really, really high level. And they lost Kyle Caro early in the year, who had been a guy who I think was a difference maker in the win over Stanford. He's going to come back at some point, but he's not ready yet. Harris, I think, is going to play this week. So, you know, I think that they felt really good about the depth in the secondary. You mentioned McShepard. He's probably gotten more of an opportunity because of the injuries. Keith Watkins, the second. But, you know, it's just they've had some guys they've been able to play. They've had to play them. But for the most part, they've played pretty well.
All this, and we still have not really talked yet about Clayton Thorson. Now we're about to make that transition to him. Dave, he's a redshirt freshman. What has allowed him to run this thing the way McCall wants him to run it?
Well, the thing that Pat always says about him, and the word he uses to describe him, is unflappable. And, you know, I think we've seen examples of that throughout this season. He's got size. He's got a strong and accurate arm, although his passing numbers haven't been anything. I mean, you know, you've seen the numbers, and this passing offense has been ranked at or near the bottom of the Big Ten and, you know, in the bottom third or lower in all of college football this season. But at the same time, he's made plays with his arm that you kind of go, wow, that's pretty good. And, we saw it a couple times. I'll tell you, there was a nice drive right at the end of the half at Nebraska where they had a minute to go. I think they had a couple of timeouts left, and he drove them down the field, just short to intermediate passes, nothing spectacular. But I think it showed that they've got confidence in him. And they know he's going to have to throw the ball. But I think that Mick McCall is giving him, not a ton. I mean, it's not like he's got to go out and win the game with his arm right now. But he's able to make enough plays with his arm and certainly with his legs. And we saw that very vividly against Nebraska when he had the two long runs.
Yeah.
One set up the first touchdown, the other set up that field goal right before halftime. You know, you can see the talent there. You can see the ability. You can see the upside. And I think that's what's got Northwestern so excited about his future. Even if, you know, there are times this year, like any freshman, where he's had some bumps in the road.
Have they run much read option with him or speed option with him along the way because he can run?
Yeah, he can, but not a ton. It's certainly not the Kane Coulter offense
right
that we've seen in the past. But I think you can see when he's got any kind of a crease, and against Nebraska, especially that first run he made early in the game, you know, he realized that he had the opportunity, and all of a sudden he's out running a number of guys on the Nebraska defense and ran it down all the way inside the 10-yard line. And he's not bad. He's got, I think, what you would call, I don't know if it's deceptive speed, because I think it's pretty obvious that he's fast, but I was doing the game in Nebraska with Dan Persa, who of course is a guy you remember very well.
Oh,
Steve.
Yeah. Bethlehem's own.
Exactly. And I said to Dan, I'm okay. I said, man, it looks like Dan Persa out there. And Dan said, oh, no. I was never that bad. And, Dan, you know, Dan could motor a little bit.
Yeah,
so,
he could.
You know, I just, he's got size. He's got a strong arm. He can make plays with his legs. But, you know, he's still kind of learning how to play week in and week out in the Big Ten, which is no small task.
If anybody doesn't think Dan Vitale's not an NFL player, I don't think they know college football. How special has he been in the scheme of this thing?
Well, they needed a receiver to kind of step up a couple of games ago. And, you know, we've seen Dan do that so many times. And, you know, it helps out a redshirt freshman quarterback when you have a guy who's played so much football for him. And you know, Dan followed a guy another guy I know you remember very well, and Drake Dunsmore.
Oh, yeah.
Who was, you know, terrific at that position for Northwestern. But you know, Dan's a captain. You know, when things have not necessarily gone well for this offense, he's a guy who can kind of take charge. And, you know, he's got the years of experience behind him. And, you know, he's made some plays. They were kind of struggling against Ball State in their non-conference finale, and all of a sudden they got the ball into Dan's hands, and he's gone almost 70 yards for a touchdown, and that really kind of turned the game around. So, you know, I think having him, and the other guy is Christian Jones, who's come back from injury, but he's a captain, he's a senior, and a guy who, you know, they've always counted on to make the big third down catch, and generally, he's done it. They've had a little more trouble getting the ball to him this year. And in fact, they thought they had a touchdown to him at the end of the half at Nebraska. They ended up kicking the field goal. But right. They have two guys like that. And I'll tell you, they missed Christian last year in a big way. He got hurt in fall camp, tore his ACL, and he was the guy that they really looked to, Trevor Siemian would look to in tough situations. Mm-hmm. So I think having him back is also another piece of the security blanket for Clay Thorson.
Two more questions, then I'll let you go, and then you and I will have a go-around tomorrow at noon for a little bit.
Sounds good.
Yeah, no. The first of the two questions is about Justin Jackson. Into his sophomore year, has he become a more patient back in what they want to see as the maturity level of a very good back continues?
I don't think there's any question about it. I think we really saw it as the season went on last year.
Yeah.
I mean, by the end of the year, I think he'd become a much more mature player. You know, we saw his toughness early on and his ability to run both between the tackles and to get to the edge. And he got better as the season went on. This year, he started well. Then kind of ran into some pretty good rushing defenses that they went up against in Michigan and Iowa, and even against Nebraska. Their success on the ground, for the most part, in the first half, was courtesy of Clayton Thorson. They were bottling Jackson up, and you know, when you can't throw the ball consistently and effectively, that's going to happen. But as the game went on, things opened up. And what really impressed me, Steve, is that he didn't have the big gains on the ground that we've seen from Justin over the course of his season and a half plus that he's played. He made a couple of big pass receptions and turned them into big gains in the fourth quarter. One that I believe set up a field goal, and the other that enabled them to kill the clock. Basically, they held the football the last 4 minutes and never gave Nebraska a chance to get the ball back. So seeing him and Clayton click on those, I think that really bodes well for him. And it shows, you know, he's a guy who's definitely a threat coming out of the backfield catching the ball.
I've done Penn State, obviously, for a long time. You've done Northwestern, obviously, for a long time. And when we were going through some of the, you know, on defense, offense, we mentioned the two coordinators that have been there a long time. Pat's been there a long time. They've kept the staff together a long time. What, in your opinion, as someone who's been around this on an everyday basis for a long time, what has it meant to the stability and the future of Northwestern football that they've stuck with Pat and they've kept the staff stable?
Well, I think it's huge. And I think, you know, we just saw an example. I mean, you know it well at Penn State. We saw an example of it in Minnesota where, Jerry Kill had that staff together from, I think, go back to his days at Emporia State.
Yeah, he's got seven of his nine assistants have been with him 15 years or longer.
And you know, Steve, in this business, that's not easy.
No.
You want your guys to be able to move up. You want to provide opportunities for them. And they're going to get opportunities if they're good at the job. And so I think it's a real credit to the head coach in those situations because guys have opportunities. And not to say they won't eventually move on, but guys have opportunities, yet they like where they are. They enjoy the people they're coaching with and the players they're coaching. I think that all factors into it. And I think if you have a head coach who'll go to bat for you, whether it's to get you more money or whatever it might be, you know, I think it means the world to these guys because they know what a volatile profession it is. And so I think for Pat to keep this staff together, you know, I think he saw it with Gary Barnett, who was one of his mentors. He saw it with Randy Walker, who was also a mentor to him, that these guys really excelled in terms of keeping their staffs together. And Pat's done it very well, and I'll tell you, it's hard to believe this is his 10th year already, and he did have his 40th birthday this year. So, you know, I don't think it's ever been a question of them sticking with him. But I think he's very loyal to Northwestern, and, you know, it's a place he definitely wants to be.
Dave, absolute pleasure, as always, you know that. Thanks so much for the time.
Anytime, Steve. Well, why don't we talk tomorrow?
Let's talk tomorrow. Let's do that.
Okay. All right, we'll see you.
Thanks, Dave. That wraps it up for today. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the Beverage Supermarket. From the Sunbury Motors Studio, I'm Steve Jones on News Radio 1070 WKOK.